You are listening to Jaya Ashmore. You can find hundreds of meditations and talks on my websites, jayaashmore.org, jayaashmore.org, as well as opendharma.org, opendharma.org. All the recordings are offered in the tradition of generosity or dana, and your gifts are welcome. Thank you for listening.
Would anyone like to ask or share something?
Is there another question?
Yes, please.
I started to go, but what do you do when you really get fear? And it's like,
so there's so many things that could be helpful. But I think what I wish to encourage you is to feel that, okay, fear came really strong. Is there a way of accepting that as part of the unfolding path? So not that we want or wanted fear to come, but we know it is needed to come.
I kind of know why, or I know why, and it's maybe something that can be done to do with health care thing, but it's very seldom I get this fear like this, or so, other fear in many other situations, and that's I've been able to kind of sit with, but this was kind of knocking me totally out. And it's a very tough question to say in this.
Yeah. So much courage. How do you feel now?
Small.
Who spoke? If at all, you small can feel you who spoke. If the small can feel that part that spoke, just even a little bit.
Also humiliation. And always saying it's always humiliation.
Did anyone not know what Gina is talking about? Did anyone not experience strong fear like that? That you didn't know what to do with it? Has anyone not ever experienced that? No one's moving at all. I think rather the stillness in the room is being touched by you. The strength of your practice to allow that fear to be felt. In a way that stretches you beyond what you thought, beyond what you know.
If you came before today like that, in the beginning when I kind of discovered this different life, I was quite brave saying things without knowing I was brave because it came so natural. But as the time passed by, I've noticed with myself that I'm more kind of trying to fit in some way. And I was talking to myself today and saying that you must be braver than yourself. Mm. But I didn't know it would come out of this also.
You accepted an invitation from yourself. So the energy of fear is met.
Anyway, I need to speak to Jessica. It has to do with I have asthma.
Mm.
And I'm, of course, quite scared sometimes since I have asthma.
Mm.
So it was something like, kind of, I'm trying to use a lot of people's words, almost words, like, it was like more thinking into it. I just want to say thank you for being a place it's possible to say thank you. It's also good.
So if we just give a few moments quiet, please. When the unknown is met, or when strong or raw energy is met, what is it like? For you. Just met. I'd like to suggest and encourage us all to feel in this lifetime what would be like worth gambling on. If we start to get the sense that there's not going to be a guarantee about something, and or if there is a guarantee, maybe it's not what we were really feeling for, it's not so alive. That's more mechanical. And even before we really are ready to fully accept, if we find that to be the case, that there's not really a guarantee, that if you practice such and such a way, such and such a number of hours and days in this way, on that sort of time of year in that place, then the output is. And that even for sure there will be surprises. And it feels a little bit dangerous to bring up a question like that, because I wouldn't want to encourage you to be sort of thinking about it all the time, or thinking about in a really thinky kind of way, from sort of fear or worry or wanting to get it the right answer or something. The answer that would guarantee the outcome, you know. We were talking about preparation yesterday. And as with caring about anything that's alive, there's a way that there's some preparation that's already being in. We're preparing the garden, we're in the garden, we're gardening. And I feel like one of the things that I happily gamble on is that the path emerges as we go along. Surprisingly, always. Even when it is something not so spectacular or predictable even, and yet just like in the garden, the sense that we have, we didn't make the apple. So like the story of the Argonauts going on their journey and the whole time having to keep remaking their boat, their ship. And so by the time they're at the end, it's all different. There's not one thing that's what they started with. Another thing that I'm not sure if I can quite put it into the sentence that, yes, I gamble on. I think it's true, but I'm still finding the words. But love is another word that comes to mind. And even with the so many different meanings of the word. the so many different meanings of the word that it starts to, love has other names like space. Chögyam Trungpa Rinpoche talks about the soft spot that we all, without exception, seem to have at least one, two, three, which is what we've been kind of touching on each day, something that you like or love, that there's a response to. Someone, something, someplace, some quality that you revere or receive. Find your soft spot. What Trungpa meant by soft spot, if I understood correctly from reading him, I never met him in person, thankfully. Is an opening in the armor. So it's just another way of feeling where soft spot, liking, loving, appreciating, trusting, feeling the sacredness of, resonating with. But especially, because part of preparing the garden is the nourishment, is the soil, is it fully nourishing? And I think the main thing, I think, for us is what's juicy. And I think that's partly because culturally it's not allowed. And there might be reasons beyond this sort of age. Where even the juiciest things get over-explained. And familiar in a way that's not really intimate. Even things that would be juicy, we kind of plug into the grid about right and wrong. Hope and fear. And today we had the chance to feel someone meeting fear, feeling fear, but actually fearlessly, though you might not put it that way. You might not describe yourself as fearlessly while feeling, but we saw you. Talk about it to 45 people. And just kind of demonstrate right here that it's not the eradication of fear that is fearless, or that is feeling fear. But it's letting those things meet where something feels small and there's something else, we don't know what it is. And not that it's just one thing that could be, that could have room for that intense energy. I'd like to tell a story that I'm reporting third hand. Tara Brach tells a story about a woman who was with her mother while her mother was dying. over at least days, unconscious. And being there anyway. So it's also a kind of a bit of a metaphor, or just maybe not a metaphor, but an example of the beauty of that willingness to be somewhere that there's no way to know if it makes any difference, that your 24 hours and 24 hours and 24 hours are in that room, stroking that hair. And then her mother opened her eyes and shifted. And I actually want to get the words exactly right. I'm going to talk. Apparently, she just said one sentence. And it wasn't I love you or thank you or anything like that. But it's a little bit of an earthquake. This has been in my notes for a couple of days. She said, "You know, all my life I thought there was something wrong with me. And she just sort of slightly shook her head and closed her eyes. And several hours later, she passed away. And so, sitting with the story of a noble death. Really coming inside that fabric of life and feeling the possibility of shaking off the so many ways that we're weaving into that sense that there's something wrong. And what are the things, the practices and places and people and ways and qualities that can kind of turn us inside out now? I think the story can easily, we can hear the truth. And we can also feel a resistance to going there, to knowing. All my life, I thought there was something wrong with me. And that that could be shaken off. That it's not true. It's not built into us. It's not true living. And what's in the way? One of the first easy things that could come so easily that we would think it would be so egotistical to say that what's wrong with me is not important. What's wrong with me is not, let's say, that important. Or even recovering, or it's not even exactly recovering, but stepping into that innocence. Against all odds. And in the stepping in, there can be that feeling of the emergent path, that in the stepping is the step. And again, we can just look and think and remember gardening. The most humble natural occupation. Compared to the mind that thinks like a factory, has been educated in a factory, a garden is just like a pipe dream, you know, that you would put some seeds in the ground and think you're going to get food, yeah, and that it could be beautiful as well, and that anyone would be interested in all the hard work involved. And so when I speak of gambling, we can think of gardening. It's never all in our hands. All in our hands, it's never all in our hands. We can do everything right and have no food. And still be willing to do it again. Why? So it's not sort of hard-hearted gambling, where we sort of need to intoxicate ourselves before we'd really be willing to put all the money down. That sort of image of gambling. It's love. And it's curious, I think that as we've gotten more what we call sophisticated and maybe jaded and also maybe experienced and also talking a lot more about love in the last decades, I think the more that we have theories and talk about it, the less it's love, and the more it's some sort of negotiation. And the more our friends would be likely to say, oh no, you deserve better, kind of thing. Which might be true, also. In the way that they mean it, it could be. It could be true that we're in a situation. Which part was the beginning? Any word that could remind me? Milestone? Okay, I'll try it anyway.
I might say yes.
The more we talk about love and have explanations of it and how, so the question that comes is like, what to do when this fear is in my face and my bloodstream? Which means how? How can I engineer this situation properly? So the more that we go into that sort of mind, the less it's love. And so then it's more and more possible that even people who do love us, when we're having some trouble with something that we love, might be at the garden. let's even not talk about personal relationships. No. It's the garden. That garden. I'm worried about you spending so much time in the garden. What are you going to get out of it? It's not treating you well. It's not big enough for you, or maybe too big. What I'd like to suggest is in so small, ordinary moments, really letting life kind of flower into your receiving. So just now, any sensation in the body, for example, or the bluebells, or the light coming in, or your hand. If it's hard to feel your hand, how about looking at your hand? And not sort of being in such a hurry to get on with mindfulness of giving a chance. So I'm still working out how these cushions can help me be solid and comfortable on the ground. So similarly, inside, okay, the hand, from inside or from the eyes, or from touching, being touched by it. It could just be, for example, the temperature of some part of your hand. It doesn't have to even be like, oh. Anything special. That shape of the bluebell, the spaces in and around, that it evokes. So just cool as cool. Sometimes we find, oh, okay, now, met. And it's so powerful that it's disconcerting. Just cold is cold, hot is hot. that particular space is that particular feeling. And it's like almost a burst or a flowering or an unfolding. And Dhammadinna, the nun that I almost said the mum, the nun that I mentioned this morning, also gives another really helpful clue. When we find what is the way, what's supportive, that then experience could be met, any experience. So really simple, okay, like any, just sound. Cold, coolness on this part of the middle finger. Shape of one petal of a bluebell or whatever, or the whole thing also. What she noticed is that what's pleasant feels good, and what's neutral when it's met also feels good. And so then, like, the majority of our experience feels good. And then there's the painful. And we seem to have more energy to be there for it to be met, rather than a wrangle with not actually quite feeling it, but being more in touch with how mostly I think it's something wrong. And a little bit of how it hurts. And we get out of shape, out of alignment. But we find so much soft spot with that, what's pleasant already, what was neutral until it was met, and then was pleasant. That what is painful is met differently. Just met, more likely. And so then, what is coming up that's unpleasant? Like that fear that came. Through the invitation of the momentum of our practice, that pain that comes up is met more on its way out. And by not taking it and making the story about it, we let it go. And then there's still what's just unpleasant or painful. Met. And if we really uncomplicate, because when we think of it, that could sound scary or too broad, like something that you don't like about the bluebell or whatever, or some other. It's not hard to find something, whatever, I don't like that, okay. And, okay, though I don't like it, let it be met. And we get the hang of that it's the met thing that we long for. That's what I mean by kind of turning inside out. That's what I mean by kind of turning inside out, letting the experience or the moment and so it's just a small moment of gambling met. And I'm not saying that you should now from now on continuously in all things meet fully and wholeheartedly and with equanimity. Like shifting around and till you feel that's meeting more, a little bit. Nourishment, space. Something shifts in my body and then maybe the intuition is a little more available for the next step of the path that wasn't just invisible to you, but didn't exist until the step stepped. And so Dina was saying, thank you for being a space where this could be said. And I didn't want to say more words at the time, but it's also and equally thank you for being a space where this can be said. And secondly, so there's the meeting moments here and there. And again, where we find that it's letting it be met, so then even what's painful or unpleasant or we just don't like it, the richness of it anyway comes across. And then that becomes the richness of this included, oneself included. So secondly, and lastly also, what is your chanting? So for the Benedictine monks, chanting was that useless thing that was absolutely central. It was the spine of their life. And giving yourself time for that to be discovery, an ongoing discovery. You might have a little clue and you roll with that. And it might either, you might have two clues, or it might actually change, evolve. It's no longer chanting that chant. The activity might be different, or the place, or the people, or whatever. And I was trying to find that word for what is it. It's not recovering innocence, because it's not going back, it's not regressing to some innocence that we did have as a child. It's similar, it's childlike, but it's a ripening into an innocence. Discovering, remembering. It's a really improbable ripening, like all ripenings. Well, we could almost say it's impossible. According to the factory mind, it's impossible. Just like the apple is impossible, and the bluebell, and the next breath. But it can feel like remembering, and it can feel like recovering. And so this word remembering in Sanskrit is smriti, in Pali sati, and we call it mindfulness. And we mean something other than what I'm talking about, usually, when we talk about mindfulness. And so I'd like to expand mindfulness from not only, so it's not only just meeting. So we practice, first we notice, as an observer noticing something, and gradually we let the juiciness call us into meeting. But actually, smriti, sati, remembering, we could use in another way. Remembering what is your version of chanting. What is your spine? What is your calling? What is your path? What does it feel like to be part of the emergent path. And then innocence is an even better word than ever, because it's that innocence not knowing. And so it's this really deep acceptance. It's not just that I, poor small me, don't know, but that it would change the nature of the path if we related to it as a known. If I think that it's on a map somewhere, my path, and I have to find that map and follow that map, and then I can walk or crawl or whatever. We're standing still. So if we kind of feel that remembering is a really weird word in terms of sati, mindfulness, to describe being present, it's so weird that it might take a while to realize how weird. Remember means usually something from the past that happened that I'm thinking about or whatever. Remembering as being present. Let the weirdness of that word start, like, work on you from the inside. And it's a little bit like that when we something kind of, how do we remember? So how do we remember, the path that is only, hasn't yet formed? Is a little bit similar to how do we remember, what was that person's name? And you have that feeling of almost, I can almost remember. And then what do you do? To try to fish that name out. It's a curious state. Like, open, still, don't try too hard, don't forget that you're trying to remember that person's name. What is your own, that mind's particular trick of holding that bookmark of that page of that person's name? So similarly, not the same, but similarly, something starts like, maybe I could practice, and what is it? Maybe it's some sort of shift. What is that shift that I can feel? Okay. Thank you for listening and participating with presence and words.